Welcome to the Permaculture Podcast with Scott Mann, a listener-supported program. My guest for this episode is Eric Tonesmeyer, and we talk about the upcoming Financial Permaculture Workshop in Homestead, Florida. We use that conversation to provide examples of applying the ideas of financial permaculture to the real world, building regenerative businesses, connecting with financiers because, as much as it would be great if we didn't have to, permaculture projects do require money, and also doing community development, so we can build the local structures now for a bright, vibrant future. Though I was a little sick and foggy when Eric and I recorded the interview, the number of possibilities presented during this discussion kept my mind turning idea after idea after idea over and over again about using what we were talking about in my own community, and at times left me a little bit speechless. And I'm sure you'll find plenty of ways to make a difference with this knowledge as well. As always, I'd love to hear from you, as you do. But stick with me after the interview for more details about the course if you're interested in attending. Now on to our time with Eric. Then, since we're going to be discussing financial permaculture, why don't you give us a basic starter of what is financial permaculture?
Sure. Financial permaculture is just the application of permaculture to business and economic systems. So it's just another attempt to meet human needs while improving ecosystem health around us. It's really looking at three primary areas, at least so far. One piece is the part I like the best, or I've done the most of, which is regenerative enterprise planning, sort of the business planning for a permaculture enterprise, or including business planning and some financial projections in the permaculture design process. The second piece is financing, and this is where we bring in groups like Slow Money and some other people doing innovative financing efforts, many of whom say we want to fund permaculture, we want to give loans at good interest rates to permaculture enterprises. So that's very exciting to build that bridge between the sort of permaculture producer and the financing world, the sort of alternative or green financing world. And then the last piece is about economic development, which to me is really about not just transforming our communities overall, but looking at creating businesses that plug into each other like the members of an ecosystem. And I can talk a little bit about some case studies of each of these things to give a little bit more examples of each of them. I can start with the economic development piece. Actually, that's something I've done here in my city of Holyoke, Massachusetts for many years. I've worked with an organization called Nuestras Raíces, which means our roots in Spanish. We have a community of lots and lots of folks who grew up in the mountains of Puerto Rico, came to the U.S. as farm workers, and now live in the city here. And so in addition to community gardens and a lot of other sort of community building and food security efforts, we've looked at building businesses that plug into each other in several different kinds of ways. One is we looked at building an agritourism, a cultural agritourism site on our farm just 2 miles from downtown, where we wanted to create business opportunities where each business basically through pure selfishness on their own part, couldn't help but benefit the others because of the way we designed it. So there's a farm store, there's a pig roasting business, there's an equestrian operation, there's a promotion and live events component. The idea is we have these big festivals down there where you have live Puerto Rican hillbilly music, you have 12 pigs roasting at once with plus, you know, 30 or 50 chickens roasting. You have a farm store, you have vending booths for farmers to sell their own products, and you have these horse shows of Paso Fino horses, which are a special breed from Puerto Rico. So you put all that together, and each of those pieces is able to draw customers from the others, and they're often also buying products, buying raw material from the other businesses on site, like the pig roasting operation is going to buy pigs, and it's going to buy, you know, the restaurant that's going to buy vegetables and so on. And then also the waste products of those businesses help each other, like the food waste from the farm store, the rotten vegetables don't get sold, go to the pigs. and the horse manure goes out to the vegetable fields and so on. We had a restaurant at that time downtown with a frying, you know, with a fryer and vegetable oil. So we built a greenhouse with a vegetable oil powered heater so that it could run on the waste veggie oil. So we're looking at those, both the economic and the materials connections between those businesses. And that to me is part of the economic development approach of permaculture. The other thing that I really like around this is I've just been reading this Sprawl Repair Manual. Have you ever read this one?
I can't say that I have.
It's a fantastic sort of community planning book that looks at suburban sprawl as an ecological and social disaster and says, okay, well, if what we want is to rebuild communities, to rebuild neighborhoods, and to tool up to transfer to public transportation and walking and bicycles instead of cars, we need to rebuild our suburban wastelands. It's a beautifully written book, and then it goes through section by section looking at different types of land use patterns like golf course and strip mall and housing, you know, suburban housing development and mall and so on, all these, the industrial park and all these different components of suburban sprawl. And for each one shows how you can redesign it, how you can retrofit existing sprawl to create a living community. The host for this financial permaculture course is a group called Earth Learning in South Florida. And I went down and did a workshop with them earlier this year on redesigning the greater Everglades food shed. In other words, the sort of greater Everglades areas, the southern, maybe third or so of Florida. And how can we rebuild a living food infrastructure? And a big part of that is sprawl repair, because so much of South Florida has been just totally overwhelmed with sprawl. And there was a companion volume to that sprawl repair guide whose name I'm afraid is escaping me, but it's about what they call agrarian urbanism. It's written by folks from DPZ, which is the same planning company. And they're really looking at sprawl repair with food production specifically. So they're looking at from the urban core all the way out to the most rural fringes, what types of food production are appropriate at each of those scales, and how can we design, say, like housing and building and infrastructures at each of those scales that maximizes opportunities for food production, for example, by not setting up your building so that they block solar access for the garden next door and so on. That's the economic development aspect of financial permaculture, which I think is really, really, really cool and really important. And it's a bigger scale than most of us have done permaculture. We've mostly done backyards, and some of us have done some community efforts. Some people have done farms. But to really look at transforming an entire town or city, and ultimately to develop those modular solutions that get repeated, you know, on a global scale, that's cool stuff. And that's some of what we're looking at here. So economic development is one component. Financing is another, and this is where, this is my least expertise area, but we have some people coming in who really know about this. There's all these creative ways to get financing. You know, you can save up the money yourself, you can charge up all your credit cards, you can borrow money from your friends, you can borrow money from the bank. But there are a number of very interesting efforts happening where people are looking at new ways to finance, particularly sort of food and sustainable enterprises. And one of the ones I really like is that there are lots of foundations out there who believe in this kind of stuff and give grants for nonprofit projects. But the way that most foundations work is they have a huge endowment. They have a great big pool of money, and the interest that comes off of that every year is what they give away in their grants. But they have this huge piece of money meanwhile. So there's this new phenomenon called program-related investment, where they take the money in their endowment and invest it in projects they believe in. So there's a foundation called the Wholesome Wave Foundation, which funds all kinds of really cool things like increasing the redemption of food stamps and WIC coupons at farmers markets and things like that. But a friend of mine is their program-related investment guy, and his job is to go around and invest their endowment money in food hub enterprises that are trying to rebuild a local food processing and distribution infrastructure. in different areas. So that's pretty cool. Then there's crowdsourced fundraising where you use Kickstarter and things like that to raise money online. And we'll have all kinds of people. I'll talk a little bit later on about some of the folks who are speaking there. And there's people doing really, really interesting things around how to finance your food or permaculture business. CSA even being a great example of a non-traditional financing where your customers of your business are the ones who provide you with your operating capital every year. So that was economic development and financing. And then the last piece is regenerative enterprise planning, which is really, I've been teaching farm business planning courses for 10 or 12 years now. I actually wrote a book with my old job called, helped write a book called Exploring the Small Farm Dream for people who are thinking about starting farms. And I've taught a course called Tilling the Soil of Opportunity, which is an agricultural business planning course. And I teach a course, the Exploring the Small Farm Dream course, and another one called Planning Your Small Farm for the state of Massachusetts every year. The piece that's interesting to me about this is what's different about business planning for a permaculture business than just for a regular old farm. Well, partly most of us in permaculture are not the sharpest bookkeepers or financial planners in the first place. That's not what draws people to permaculture mostly historically. But I like to look at how, say, a commercial scale polyculture enterprise, the planning is different because, like, on an annual vegetable farm, it's going to be the same every year. But on a tree crop farm, those tree crops are going to produce more every year over the first 10 years. And you have to plan for that. You have a longer scale of planning. And then maybe they're going to make shade, and that's going to impact the pasture productivity below them. And then as you incorporate livestock to do some of the integrated role on your farm, they're going to reduce some of your pest control costs, and they're going to reduce some of your fertility costs. So looking at how to incorporate all those pieces makes for a rich and complex and interesting financial plan. And then I also will be talking at the course a lot about stacking functions, which is a classic permaculture, but in this case, say, if you have lots of products on your farm, stacking so that they all use the same marketing strategy. So you're not running to the wholesale distributor and going to the flower shops and going to the farmers markets and selling on farm, because that'll drive you crazy. How can you design a polyculture that not only produces a number of products that make you money and works together as a polyculture or a series of polycultures, but also has a set of products that share the same marketing strategy and as well the same processing equipment? So can they all share the same solar dryer? So you don't have to buy an oil press and a dryer and a commercial kitchen and everything else, but you can minimize your processing needs. So we'll be talking about a lot of that stuff at the course, and we've done some of this at carbon farming courses, and I feel like permaculture is stepping up. Rafter Ferguson's Liberation Ecology survey around commercial permaculture farming found over 75 self-identified permaculture farms in the U.S. that are farm scale selling products. And this is sort of a new phenomenon that permaculture stepping up to the big scale to meet the climate challenge, to get at the amount of acreage we want to get at. We need to look at these other aspects of permaculture, and we need these connections with the slow money people of the world and with the sprawl repair people and the ecological community development folks, economic development folks. So that was a very long rant, but that's what's exciting and interesting to me about this. I think it's really cool and necessary.
One of the things that I keep running into with the direction that I'm pushing this show and my interaction with the world of permaculture is to bring all these disparate parts together into a place where people can learn about them. Because if we're going to take this next step and take the course material that was provided to us by Holmgren and Mollison in the early days, and then that struggle through the 80s and early 90s of developing this knowledge, then that kind of resurgence that came out of the late 90s with our interconnected world, with all the technology and information that we have available, we're now at that next step where we can take those original ideas that were about building a permanent culture and applying all of these principles and pathways to the design of civilization, that it's not just about growing food to make sure that we're able to eat. And if we're going to do that, we have to integrate our business planning and our farm planning and our community development into a cohesive whole. And it's nice to see this kind of growth out of that and the conversation and the coursework beginning to happen. As you mentioned, Rafter Ferguson's work and what he's doing to locate these things, there's the work of Warren Brush in California, who's bringing in the slow money and building a large-scale permaculture farm, that you're bringing together all these different teachers to Florida to bring people together where they can learn, even though you lay out these three ideas of regenerative business planning, finance, and economic development, all of those tie together one to the next, that we can then take this back into our own communities and engage business and go, this is how I can apply this funny word that you've never heard before into a more productive business by connecting you and keying you into other people who are perhaps at this moment seen as competitors, but who you can cooperate with to build a more productive business and begin speaking the language of the people who we need to engage to continue to make this grow. When you first started down this conversation, it felt so far removed from anything that I've encountered that I was a little stunned as you started laying it all out and left a little speechless, but it begins to come together with how we can make this happen and do so much more with it.
I really think so. I mean, to leaving all of permaculture's grandiose dreams aside, just to address climate change, we have to transform every aspect of our society. Not just food and not just buildings, which permaculture's done pretty well with those, and not just energy, which we do okay with, but transportation and processing and distribution and all these bigger picture things. And you can apply, permaculture is a set of principles that can be applied to anything. And this is about really more about plugging people and money into each other, as opposed to plugging, you know, chickens and comfrey and apple trees or something together. But it's the same basic principles. And maybe I should talk a little bit about the site that we're going to be working on and the design projects there. Because the reason this course came about actually is I was teaching a food forest course at this place called Earth Learning in South Florida in spring of this year. And I thought, you guys are the best example of financial permaculture I've ever seen, and we need to do a course here so people can learn from what you're doing. So this is a small nonprofit in South Florida who got the opportunity to sort of expand dramatically. There's a naval base in Homestead. This is south of Miami. It's the last piece of solid land in Florida before you get to mangroves and the Keys and stuff. So it's a place where you can grow mangoes and avocados, and it's really the only truly frost-free place in the mainland U.S. that I'm aware of. Maybe a little bit of Southern California, maybe a little bit of Texas, but this is where there's like huge jackfruit farms and stuff like that. There are papaya farms that you don't see in many other places in the U.S. There's a former military base there, and a big piece of it was decommissioned, and they've converted a bunch of that into housing for formerly homeless people. Part of that project was to set up a farm. So there's about a 30-acre site that Earth Learning was given access to, which is pretty excellent on its own. The soil's terrible, but the climate is phenomenal, you know. And it was all overgrown with, you know, invasive brush and stuff, which they've cleared all out. And they were also constructed a beautiful market building. So the businesses that we're going to be taking forward during the course are four of the businesses that Earth Learning is working on. They've been on the site for maybe a year or 18 months or something now. So it's all still new. But I've been down there, and there's 500 fruit trees in the ground, and there's real things happening down there, you know. First is the farm, and there's a couple different components to that. There's a nursery, a very cool nursery. There's a livestock operation, which includes both smaller scale things like some goats and poultry, which are partly used to manage the landscape, but also about 20 acres that's being developed into a savanna where there will be probably dairy water buffalo in a nut savanna with like coconuts and jackfruits and Mayan bread nuts and stuff like that, widely spaced trees with rotational grazing underneath, which I think is a really cool idea. There's also a great big water area there that'll be like native lotus with water buffalo and duck integration and stuff. Then there's a couple of agroforestry areas where they're integrating annual crops with chop and drop legume plants. There's about 2 or 3 acres they just put in of a stripped down simple polyculture of pigeon pea, banana, and papaya with sweet potato underneath. And then there's a real complex food forest. There's about 3 acres of complex food forest that is under development. All the trees are in, and they're working on establishing the understory and management systems and stuff for that. So one team that I'll be working with is going to really work on the farm and work on working out that what's the business model and what are the products and what are the markets. And what's exciting to me about that, again, thinking about permaculture and connecting pieces together, is we're in the tropics. We can grow tropical crops, and Miami is right down the street and is one of the largest immigrant populations in the country, full of people who are from those countries and want those products. So we've got the capacity to grow the product, and we've got the market for the product, and then we're providing culturally appropriate food. So one of the things we're doing is a Yelp search of Miami to find out the high-priced restaurants for various tropical countries of origin. So we can find out, okay, and a lot of these crops are grown all through the tropics. So we can sell curry leaf not only to folks from, say, South India and Sri Lanka, but also people from Guyana and South America where they like curry leaf as well. So that part is going to be really fun. I'm really pumped about that. I like that a lot. The next one is they have a commercial kitchen in their market building where they are legally able to produce and process and sell different kinds of processed products, from coconut water to pickled and dried vegetables. Right now they have a really nice line like kale chips and things like that. And one of the things I'd really like to see them develop is South Florida has a very, very high population of native plant enthusiasts, partly because the Everglades are really, and their ecosystems, because their ecosystems are a mess. And the Everglades in particular is something that people really, really care about down there. And it happens that they have in the Everglades native tomatillos, well, native ground cherries, same genus as tomatillos, native hot peppers, native onions, and all kinds of other interesting things that would make a really cool all-native salsa, which would be really fun to grow those products and produce a line of all-native salsa and then market it to folks in that sort of conservation community. So that team is going to be looking at what's the food they can get from the farm on site and that they can buy in from other farms in their sort of food shed, and what are the processed products that they can produce, like water buffalo yogurt is actually a pretty big product in some parts of the world. So that group's going to be looking at that. And they also have not only their regular commercial kitchen there, but they have a 30-foot trailer that's all set up as a processing kitchen as well. That's just about ready to be certified as a commercial kitchen as well. And I think for folks anywhere, that commercial kitchen is such a big step towards having a processing business. Anywhere in the U.S. where you want to sell processed foods, most of them need to be done through a commercial kitchen. Sometimes you can use a slightly less fancy one called a registered kitchen, depends on your state. And you don't need to build your own most of the time. Lots of places have timeshare commercial kitchens. And then most churches have commercial kitchens, which you can rent time in, often very affordably. And I just visited a Grange in California that they sort of say they greened the Grange. A bunch of permaculture folks took up all the memberships of the Grange, which was sort of a dying institution, and they have this huge, beautiful facility with an amazing commercial kitchen inside. So they have all these new opportunities coming out of that.
I can also add a little bit in there that if anyone is near a Masonic lodge, many of the Freemason lodges have commercial kitchens as well, and due to the relationships that they have between their buildings and the actual fraternity itself, many communities can rent those kitchens.
That's fantastic. And a lot of these places, these sort of like clubs and orders, like Elks groups and so on, they don't have the kind of membership that they used to. And they're thrilled to have someone else come in and give them some rent money and use their facility and bring their place to life a little bit. So, okay, the next element that we're going to be working on there is a farm-to-table cafe. And this is located in that same gorgeous, huge, beautiful market building. Basically, they're looking at buying in product from their own farm and from the surrounding area and having a cafe where people can come and buy food and maybe also doing some catering as well. I've had a bunch of food there at the several workshops I've done down there, and they're awesome. One of the things they'll do is they use jackfruit as a meat substitute, which is, you know, a fruit, maybe like a 2 foot, 25 pound fruit that has really nice edible nuts in it and really nice, interesting fruit. So they'll make a coconut curry with locally grown coconut milk with jackfruit and local vegetables and stuff in it. They make amazing tropical fruit smoothies there. And there's a lot of opportunity. The challenge being that this site is, Homestead is just one big sprawl. There's no real proper downtown. And this is off kind of to the edge of the sprawl a little bit. So we need to design the ways to bring customers out to the site to get to the cafe, to get to the market there. And that might be a matter of having sort of agritourism events or cultural events or partnering with somebody else. Or it might be a matter of bringing the cafe to them using this mobile food trailer they have and stuff like that. So that's going to be an interesting group as well. And then the last project is a bigger scale thing, is a real food hub where they're looking at developing a local foods distribution network and online market. There's a bunch of small farms around them, each of whom can only do so much marketing and distribution on their own, but they're looking at, first of all, aggregating, getting all those local farms to sort of put their product together so then they can afford things like a refrigerated truck to do some distribution and those kind of things, which is a movement that's kind of spreading all around the U.S. right now, and I'm sure elsewhere as well. What's cool about the Earth Learning Food Hub is they've also had a series of meetings with other food hubs up and down Florida to form sort of a federation of food hubs or a network of food hubs so that they might share refrigerated trucks that would go up and down the state. And from South Florida, they would bring coconuts. And from Central Florida, they would have citrus. And from North Florida, they would have dairy and blueberries and have sort of a little regional trade operation with local sustainably grown products. And I think that stuff is just really cool. Again, it's not my area of expertise, but I think that's really just super duper interesting. So those are the four projects we'll do anyway in the course. Everybody will get to work on one of these and move them forward. And I think we'll learn a ton from that. We'll present them. We'll talk about how to keep them integrated and woven together. It's going to be great.
Well, if nothing else, just hearing you lay out this presentation and everything that's currently going on at the Earth Learning site, it's made me hungry.
Mm-hmm.
And I can. I would certainly be enthused about an all locally grown salsa. Order that in as a gift for myself and some friends from a farm that I know in Florida. I can already think of probably a dozen people just here in Pennsylvania that I could buy and re-gift that to.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And one of the big food traditions in Florida that we've talked about in some of our meetings down there is the sort of food souvenir, the Florida food souvenir. You know, people bring back bags of citrus. They'll bring back jams and jellies. People bring all these foods back from Florida. It's already part of their tourist economy is food products. So how can we build these sort of food souvenirs that are healthy and supporting the local economy and sustainably grown and so on? And South Florida is not a place where there's lots of locavores. It's not a place where there's a strong local foods movement at all. And Earth Learning and their other partners are really part of trying to build something. Most of the agriculture that happens down there is large-scale industrial and shipped up this way. So there's sugarcane and there's some tropical fruit grown in big monocultures and shipped up here. And there's a lot of just regular vegetables. Like if you in the winter buy tomatoes or summer squash in the supermarket, it probably came from Homestead, Florida, you know, or a lot of it comes from Homestead, Florida. And there's terrible farm worker conditions and stuff down there. And there have been some really nice efforts. There are some really nice ongoing efforts to transition farm workers to farmers, to get farm workers set up with their own piece of land. And what's happened so far, last time I met with some of those farm workers down there, is they are still selling to the same wholesalers down there. So they're not getting a good price and the food isn't being marketed locally. So we need to build those connections between these small farmers, be they sort of crunchy permaculture types or former farm workers setting out on their own as a farmer, to link them to these high price markets in Miami and build those connections to make that community happen where there hasn't been anything happening before. And I'm super excited about it. I think that's really cool stuff.
I can see the applicability of a lot of this information, thinking about a lot of the work that's going on here in central Pennsylvania. And as you talk about that food tourism, looking at the places of cultural significance in the central Pennsylvania area. We have a large population of Pennsylvania Dutch, which others may know as the Amish. And there are certain food traditions that go with that, and the idea then of growing certain things to produce Pennsylvania Dutch-inspired products that would then be something unique to central Pennsylvania. Or, as you say, about connecting to markets with urban agriculture there's a push for in Harrisburg. And a lot of that conversation is, well, what do we grow to connect with the right markets? Because growing a head of lettuce that you're going to sell wholesale for 40 cents isn't worthwhile, because anybody can grow that, but perhaps a unique microgreen is something that you can sell, or herbs, and having those conversations to know what's of value. When you mentioned using Yelp to do a search, as plugged in as I am to technology and information, that's something that never crossed my mind, to use that service to find those markets.
We just made that up. I'm sure people have done it before, but we were thinking, we're like, how do we find out? Oh God, we just use Yelp. That's easy. Okay, we can do that. The other fun thing about Florida is there's all this seafood opportunity as well. And really part of the mission of Earth Learning is to restore the proper hydrodynamics of South Florida so the Everglades come back to life, because they're this huge estuary that provides all this fish that people eat. I've been in touch with, there's a woman named Lisa Fernandes, who's an amazing permaculture person from Maine. She'd be a great person to have on your show sometime. And she's done all this work they call farm to fish, where in Maine, you know, they're on the coast. They're trying to create connections between the fishery industry, especially small scale family owned fish boats, fishing companies, and the farm world. And some of that is things like, well, there's all these fish guts that make great fertilizer on the most basic level, but also how do they share marketing and how do they think about working this together? So out here in Massachusetts, I was part of a saltwater fish CSA this year. I'm 2 hours from the ocean and 4 hours from Cape Cod, but there's a group of small family fish businesses on Cape Cod who do sustainable fishing, you know, line fishing and all the whatever proper ways you're supposed to do that without impacting the fisheries negatively and stuff. And they now distribute through CSAs. It's like a CSA add-on through CSAs. It's all over Massachusetts. So you can get, every week you show up to get your vegetable CSA and you get lobster or flounder or whatever other scallops or oysters or other fresh saltwater meat products. And it's just awesome. It's really cool. So trying to make those connections, I think, is going to be an important piece in Florida as well, given that, you know, they're a peninsula in the middle of the tropical ocean down there. They got all kinds of crazy seafood. And their farming is killing their seafood. It's killing their corals. It's killing the Everglades. It's killing the estuaries. So we need an agriculture that actually benefits the estuaries and benefits the seafood. That's a big piece that we're trying to do down there. So no shortage of projects.
No, and no shortage of recipes. I'm just thinking about scallop ceviche and all.
Oh my God. And all the coconut stuff that they can do down there and everything is really, and mangoes, you know, they have tons of mangoes down there. So you have mango, shrimp, something or other, whatever. The other thing that we've been exploring with them a little bit is there's this thing called integrated multitrophic aquaculture. Have you heard about this?
It rings a bell, but not in that long form.
It's sort of saltwater aquaponics, and you can either do it in the ocean or in tanks. And the stuff I'm really interested in, they're doing it in tanks in Canada, where you have a primary meat fish, which is not a high food chain fish. You know, they eat small stuff. It's not like a tuna, which is sort of the tiger of the ocean. You know, it's something low on the food chain. You can raise the food for it in another tank, feed the fish, and then the fish waste runs through a series of tanks. The first round is, in some cases, edible seaweeds and mussels, inedible mussels that filter a lot of the fish manure. And then there's a further series of tanks where you have things like sea cucumbers and sea urchins, which eat that sort of final stages of the manure. So every stage of that food chain there is producing a marketable saltwater product. The Earth Learning folks are really interested in this because it would be a great way to model seafood without destroying the ocean. They're really interested in aquatic ecosystems as well, and that sort of estuary ecosystems and that kind of ecotone between the saltwater and the wetlands and stuff, what's happening in the mangroves and so on. So that's another really interesting, very promising technology that I think is still under development. It's maybe where aquaponics was 20, 30 years ago. But aquaponics was working 20, 30 years ago. The New Alchemy was doing it, and I was working at a aquaponics farm in 1993. So that was a viable commercial operation until Brazilian tilapia prices undercut us and put us out of business. Whew, boy, I'm rambling, but it's fun stuff, isn't it?
There's so much here, and there's sometimes I feel in these conversations like I just got intellectually mugged.
It's a big world, and none of us can keep up with all of it on our own. And that's a, maybe this would be a good moment to talk about a few of the keynote speakers who are going to be there and some of the perspectives that they bring.
Let's go ahead and do that, because that'll move us away from falling down this road of technology and emerging ideas that we could probably spend the rest of our time together
on. That's the danger with me. I'm a technician. I want to go to the Latin names and stuff. And the point of this workshop is that's all well and good, but you need the business model that makes it stay alive. And my perspective on this is I'm not a fan of capitalism as it is today in the least, but it's what we have to work with right now in this country. And if you want a farm here, you better be good at working within it for the time being until we come up with a good replacement and go about replacing it. Some of the other folks, the other permaculture designer who's on the keynote team is Jude Hobbs, who's a super bright permaculture designer. She works with the Cascadia Permaculture Institute out west. And not only does she have quite a lot of experience doing permaculture design with farms and looking at some of this financial stuff, but she has a multi-generational family business that she's been part of. So she really understands the operation of a small to mid-sized business inside and out. And I think bringing that together with some of her large-scale permaculture experience is going to make her a really, really excellent speaker. And her and I are designing some exercises that build off of each other really nicely, I think, for this. We have David Rose from the Regenerative Community Initiative. This is a guy I've never met, but I've never met any of these other four keynoters, but I'm really excited about them. This initiative helps communities organize locally owned banks, basically start your own bank to finance sustainable and food infrastructure projects. So if you need to build a food hub, if you need to design, if you need to put up a big farm, if you need whatever, you know, all these kind of like this next scaling up of permaculture or the broader sustainability world, they can assist you and your community to start your own bank to deal with that, which I think is really cool. We've got Jonathan Cloud. He's a sustainable business expert, and he founded something called the Sustainable Business Accelerator. That is a program for basically technical assistance and support for people who are starting sustainable businesses so that you don't have to run into the same walls and do the same mistakes that everybody else made, so that you can work with the best practices that are out there to have the most success possible, at least so you can make new and interesting mistakes and not the same old boring mistakes. Finally, we've got Emily Kawano, who is here in Western Mass. She is the director of the Center for Popular Economics, which is a really amazing program at the University of Massachusetts that works mostly with grassroots activist groups around the country and around the world to teach them in the basics of how capitalism works, how the economic system works, so that they can figure out how to work most effectively within it and organize effectively against the parts of it that are unjust and unecological. In particular, she's one of the founders of a project, the U.S. Solidarity Economy Network, which is working on building an alternative economy within the United States now and linking that to other solidarity economies around the world, which I think is just really awesome. And one of the things I love the Center for Popular Economics does is they put out every couple years something they call the Field Guide to the U.S. Economy. I assume they're still doing it anyway. And it's like a comic book that looks at understanding the fullness of the global economy, how markets work, what kinds of injustice there are in terms of distribution of wealth and so on. The whole picture, it's really great. It's a super readable. It's the most readable economics thing I've ever seen by about 10,000 times. I think she's going to be great. I think all those keynoters are great. And there's a huge team of folks who are going to be involved. There's business experts, there's permaculture experts, there's finance experts, and each of those teams looking at those four different businesses is going to have all those folks there. This is all put on by the Financial Permaculture Institute, primarily Jennifer English, who's their director, who I believe this will be the third financial permaculture course, possibly the fourth. I've been at two other ones anyway. They're just amazing organizers. Jennifer's an incredible organizer. It's going to be a really, really exciting project. It's going to be really cool.
There's plenty here for anyone who's involved in the permaculture world to take something away from, even if they're just a designer who's working in the backyard with their neighbors. I look at this and it's that next step of information that we need in order to be able to speak a more mainstream, relevant language to the people around us. So it's not, well, why does your garden look that way? Well, I'm developing this and this. We can engage people and get buy-in from our community in a way that makes more sense than kind of an insular permaculture community where we can sit and we can talk about all the lingo and all the technology and all these other things, but taking it out into the rest of the world.
I'm there, man. It's a lot more than gardening, but it's valuable to anybody in permaculture who cares about more than their backyard. You know, our backyards alone are not enough to do the job. They're not enough to stop climate change. They're not enough to address the social and ecological problems of the world. We need to look beyond our garden to our communities, and this is really about doing that. It's not just about how to make money doing permaculture, although that's a lot of us really need some help with. A lot of people need some help making more money from permaculture. A lot of permaculture professionals not making enough money yet. But it's really about transforming our communities. It's about not just having a nutrient flow within our communities, but having a money flow within our communities, keeping the money within our communities and cycling it around. And it's about, to me, you know, Mollison talks about how the yield of any system, there's no real theoretical limit to what a permaculture system can yield. And to me, that's where, you know, you hear a lot of folks say, well, we need to stop the cycle of endless growth of capitalism. And I think, sure, the way capitalism grows now is crazy and totally nuts. But we can look at a different kind of growth. We can look at ever-increasing complexity. We can look at ever-increasing diversity, and we can look at ever-increasing biological productivity. We can look at ever-increasing creativity. And that's a form of growth, or at least development, within an alternative economy. And I'm very hopeful about what the future could be if enough people decided to plug into permaculture. And I feel like this workshop is really looking at an unexamined piece of that.
The part of this that I keep turning my head around, and this is very local to my own issues, is that idea of economic development. That is a very important phrase to use when engaging civic leaders right now, especially, and being able to show how this is going to work, that you can go back to the information of, well, this is going to keep money in our community. Well, how is that going to happen? Because we're building this food hub that works within our town to engage these individuals, and being able to write a business plan so that when you go for financing, as you say, we're not very good business planners. Well, some of us aren't. I know that I'm horrible at it.
Most of us aren't. I think you could make that claim successfully. Yeah. Yeah.
I have several books that I'm staring at now that my wife has gotten me over the years from the NOLO library that is all about writing. I'm looking at one for a business plan, another one about seeking financing for small business, and sitting down to do that kind of work, even though I'm an analyst, I can do a profit and loss sheet. I can do a benefit analysis of how good it is to have that information. But for the love of Mike, sitting down to write a business plan is not something that I've ever enjoyed.
And I think doing it in a course where there's a bunch of other people who maybe feel kind of the same way, plus some actual experts who've done it a million times with a really cool case study, is a great way to get your feet wet.
It is. And then when you're sitting there scratching your head going, why? Why do I have to do this? And someone can put a hand on your shoulder and go, this is how you have to work in the system so that you can build your own system. Okay, we can do this.
And here's the guy who's ready to loan you $100,000 when you can show him that it's actually a viable project. Well, nice to meet you. And I guess I'll go work on that plan then. And I've met people at these financial permaculture events who say, you know, I'm an investment person, and on behalf of the families that I invest for, I have about $5 million out there being invested. I'm dying to invest it in permaculture events, in permaculture businesses, and in local sustainable stuff. And I need to get connected with those people, and I need them to be ready to show me that their business is going to work. I need to see the numbers to show me that it's going to work so I can responsibly invest that money. We've all got a lot to learn from each other. The finance people are going to learn more about permaculture. The permaculture people are going to learn more about finance. The economic development people are going to learn more about what kind of opportunities there are. The other folks are going to learn more about, oh my God, there's a small business administration who exists to help us learn this stuff. And, oh, hey, there's all these resources out there that can help us out. I think it's very exciting. I'm pumped about it.
It is. When you talk about grants and financiers, I've spent time at my local library that has a grant computer that you can sit at and search grants. And when you realize, as a single individual who's used to a certain amount of income and understanding this certain dollars and cents, it's like when you throw the figure out there of $100,000, my brain just kind of stops for a second as I do 100,000.00. That's a lot of money. But when you look at, as you say, a program-related investment advisor talking about having $5 million, when you look at some of the foundations that are out there that have $200, $300, $400 million sitting in an endowment, and they haven't given any money away in the last 5 to 10 years because no one knew how to contact them or that that money was out there. And I've heard before that there are several trillion dollars in the United States alone locked up in foundations and different organizations that's just untapped because of the lack of connections between the people who need that money and the formal structure of the foundation keeping it from going anywhere.
That's a resource we got to tap. There's all kinds of other really cool creative financing strategies. The 2 issues ago, I believe it was the summer or fall issue of The Natural Farmer, which is the NOFA, Northeast Organic Farming Association newspaper, was all about financing food businesses. And it had a ton of really cool case studies of how people have gotten that $1 million they needed to ramp up, like High Mowing Seed Company. It's one of the biggest organic seed companies in the country. Tom Stearns, I knew him when he had a one-page catalog that was written out by hand and photocopied. He's gotten where he is and gotten an extra, I think it was another $1 million he needed that he was able to raise locally on his terms through really creative, interesting strategies. And we'll just hear a lot about those kinds of case studies and strategies at this event. Or people can just get a copy of that magazine for $2 or $3 and read a bunch about it. There's a lot of really neat things happening out there. And permaculture is about taking all that cool stuff and plugging it in together to make systems that work. That's what's unique about permaculture. And that's what's going on here. Well, let me run the dates and stuff by people where they can register or read about it if they want to get some more. Financialpermaculture.com is the site that has all the tons of info about the course. There's a really lively blog. There's new blog entries every day or two from the different course folks. The course is January 21 to 25 in Miami, Florida. And the sooner you register, the better, because the farther out from the course that you register, you save more money. There's discounts for early registration. And if people want to, I have a special coupon code. If people want to save an extra $80, they can use ET88. That's Eric Tonesmeyer, 88, ET88, and save $80 on registering. So you can't beat that either. Why not save some money on going down? I just think it's going to be super interesting, and it's a really cool, if we want to do permaculture on more land, we need money to make it happen. If we want to have permaculture impact our communities at a big scale, you get into all this stuff, and you want to learn how to speak that language, and you want to learn who the players are and how to get plugged in. So that's not saying that we think that everything about the U.S. economy is great, or that all permaculture should be run on a business model, or any of that at all. But it's one tool to have in your toolkit for sure.
Just as the business world has a lot to learn from permaculture, we as permaculture practitioners have a lot to learn from the business world, because what the business world is currently doing works in the world that we have.
It works on the limited term. Can I throw one other area of interest out that pertains to this?
Yeah, go ahead.
One of the things I've been researching lately is industrial crops. You know, to some degree, biofuels, which there's a lot of problems with large-scale biofuels, but one of the things that especially interests me is bioplastics. I'm reading a great book called Green Plastics. It's all about bioplastics. It even has recipes to make plastic in your own kitchen with like cornstarch and glycerin and really simple bio-based stuff to make your own plant-based compostable plastics. And when we think about replacing petroleum, we need to think about some of these kinds of technologies like plastic that we use a lot of today. Where's the bioplastic? Where's the compostable bioplastic going to come from? You can do a little bit in your kitchen, but to do it right, that needs to be a you know, like a municipal scale facility or a cooperative of producers banding together to do that. There's a lot of things that if you want a civilization with some technology in it, there's a lot of things you can't just do in your backyard. You need a group of local producers and you need a facility with some technology to make bioplastics. They don't necessarily make economic sense right now under global petrocapitalism, but that's not going to last forever. So we need to be thinking about bigger scale food processing, plastic making, clean energy production, and all those pieces together. That stuff is, I think, where part of where permaculture is going. That's certainly part of where I'm headed with it. I think those things are very exciting.
That idea of green plastics and moving beyond what we can make in our backyard, there was a point that was made to me recently that the idea of self-sufficiency, of that one person alone, is poverty. That there's no advancement to be by yourself because it becomes subsistence and all you're doing is making it to the next day. And in light of what permaculture teaches us, this is about all of us being in it together and trying to keep the best parts of what we have. As I was reminded by Peter Bain, this isn't about necessarily giving up the comforts and some of the things that we've developed within society, but to help bring everyone else up to that level of comfort in a way that is not so harmful on the earth, so that we can still continue to communicate between the villages that develop in this wonderful way as we are now, hundreds of miles apart, instantaneously, sharing information.
Yeah, absolutely. And we need the internet, and the internet needs some plastic. Okay, we can do that, right? And it needs energy. Okay, we can do that. Maybe we're not going to make 10 billion Barbies every year, and maybe we're not going to make 10 million sandwich bags that get thrown out. Great, you know, not a problem. But we can provide a basis for a civilization that is more than being a peasant. Because I know subsistence farmers in Guatemala, and they don't like it. They don't want to do that, you know? Nobody wants to do that. We want the farming, we want living on the land, and we want music and culture and healthcare and education and all those pieces together. So anyway, that's real rambly, but I'm excited about these things. I'm enthusiastic.
A friend of mine was an old school anarchist / punk musician, and there's a local record shop we passed one time, and he's a couple years older than myself, and there were some guys who were younger. And when they saw his jacket, they were like, anarchy, this is great, no rules, freedom and all. And he just turns around to them. He's like, you do understand that if that didn't exist, we would be farmers. And they just stopped and looked at him. He's like, when you're going to make a statement like that, we have to understand the sociopolitical ramifications of this kind of a conversation. Are you willing to be a farmer?
Or a hunter-gatherer.
Right. And I know some people that's exactly the world that they want to live in. And that's awesome because that's exactly the road my friend was on.
God bless them. They can go do that. But really, you know, I like cafes and stuff.
Mm-hmm. I like conversations like this and knowing that 1,000 people will hear this and learn a little bit more about the possibility of financial permaculture. But I've got to thank you for this conversation because it provided a context for the financial permaculture course that wasn't really available from reading the website brief and some of the material that was out there. To hear from you as one of the people who's going to be presenting on all these different pieces and some reading that people can get involved in, some keywords that they can research if they want to find out more about these ideas. Before we wrap, in addition to your wonderful enthusiasm that you've brought to this conversation and all the places that we've gone, is there anything else that you want to share with the listeners?
I think that's basically it. I'll be putting a bunch of stuff on my website as the course draws closer that will be resources for the sort of farm business piece. And people will be welcome to go and check those out if they want. Links to farm business planning tools, A really great set of videos for beginning farmers from Cornell that have a bunch of kind of like looking at the business aspects of starting up a farm, video interviews of farmers. But no, I just hope people will come down and check it out. And if not this year, we're going to do another one probably next February. I think it's really interesting. It's a lot of fun.
Well, Eric, thank you for contacting me and letting me know about all of this. I just wish that I was in a place where I could go. But February 2014, there's always next year.
That's right. That's right.
All right. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks very much for having me.
My many thanks to Eric for joining me for this interview. After we hung up, I took a few minutes and called Mario Yanez of Earth Learning for more information about the housing and food arrangements for the course. In addition to the lodging in and around Homestead, Florida, you can also stay at Camp Owasa Bower, where the evening classes will be held. Camping is $10 to $12 a night, or you can share a room in a cabin for $25 a night. You can call the camp and make arrangements at 305-247-6016. I went looking for a website, but couldn't find one. The phone number is the best I have. And if you have any food restrictions, Mario assured me that Earth Learning plans to provide meals for everyone that they can, taking dietary issues into account. When you register, you'll have several questions to answer to help sort everything out and make sure that you get to enjoy all that fresh local food that Eric kept mentioning that sounded so appetizing. I'm still hungry now, even as I think about it. If you can take the time to go to this course at the end of January, I think it's well worth your time to go. If you do make it, tell Jude and Eric hello from me. And if you aren't able to go, maybe I'll get to see you there in 2014. We can start planning our trips together now, way in advance. In the meantime, take a few minutes and head over to thepermaculturepodcast.com and click on the support tab. As we head into 2013, I've got a great series of guests and episodes on the schedule, and I need your help to keep things rolling along. On that page, you'll find out how to make a donation or share the show with your friends and anyone else you know interested in permaculture. And if at any time you have any questions, please feel free to let me know. Show@thepermaculturepodcast.com is where you can send me an email, or 717-827-6266 is where you can give me a call. If you happen to call during the daytime Eastern, there's a pretty good chance you get a hold of me and we can sit and talk for a little bit. But as this is the last of the shows for 2012, until next year, take care of the earth, yourself, and each other.